What is direct specialty care? How is it different than normal private practice? What are some of the pros and cons? Learn the answers to these questions and many more on this episode of the Talk to Me Doc podcast.
Welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast, where it's all about serving the early career physician. Let's talk about the unique issues that face us so we can create a better future for ourselves and those to come. And now your host, Dr. Andrew Tisser.
Hey everybody, it's Andrew, and welcome back to the Talk to Me Doc podcast. I'm so happy you're here. For my returning listeners, welcome back. For my new listeners, welcome, because today, like on every episode, I'm bringing you the best guests from all around healthcare and beyond to discuss issues relating to the early career physician. Today, I bring Dr. Josh Umber onto the show. Josh was born and raised in Alma, Kansas, where he met his high school sweetheart, Lisa, while playing football in Manhattan High School and followed her to Kansas State University. While there, he majored in human nutritional sciences with a minor in biology. He also did extensive research on the effects of vitamin A on lung cancer. He then graduated from the University of Kansas School of Medicine and completed his family medicine residency at Wesley Medical Center in Wichita. After completing training and becoming a board-certified family physician, he opened Atlas MD, a practice that he had been dreaming about for nearly a decade. Atlas MD represents his ideal medical practice, where he's able to shrug off the burdens and restrictions of government and insurance regulation so he could focus solely on his patients and their needs. Now, let's welcome Dr. Josh onto the show.
Dr. Josh Umber, welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so happy you're here. I already recorded a little bit about you for the listeners, but in your own words, can you kind of tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I'm a family doctor from Wichita, Kansas, and about 12 years ago, we started our own direct primary care practice, and since then, we've helped more than 2,000 doctors and about 1,000 clinics explore or join this direct care movement, and that's primary care, specialty, even some ancillary care like physical therapists. So that's kind of where our passion lies, is helping as many doctors explore insurance-free models as we can.
That's awesome. Well, we brought you on here to talk about specialty care today, but for those who haven't listened to the last episode way back when about direct primary care, can you give us just a short spiel on what direct care even means?
Yeah, I think direct care is the idea that we can do more good for patients in an insurance-free model. Not that insurance is wrong directly, but we don't have car insurance for gasoline or home insurance for lawn care, life insurance for groceries. Why do we keep trying to fix the insurance system with more insurance? And the reality comes down to a direct care model, generally based in a membership model like a gym, can decrease the cost of so much care that ultimately it helps lower the cost of health insurance, which helps everybody. So generally, a flat rate based on age per month for a broad range of services, home visits, work visits, office visits, free telemedicine. For a lot of clinics, no co-pays, free procedures in the office. And then in the states that allow it, which is 44, 45 states, doing extra value like wholesale meds and wholesale labs, which can be up to 95% savings. So really just bringing as much kind of value to that patient as we can for the monthly membership, ultimately resulting in premiums that are 30 to 60% lower. So direct care is, in a nutshell, hopefully our solution for the healthcare system.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I first learned about direct primary care a couple of years ago and been hoping for someone to start one here in Buffalo, New York, and I got my wish. I see a couple of practices popping up, so hopefully I can join one soon. I think it's great, and I think it's wonderful that there are people like you educating others and helping others with the tools to get them started. So how is direct specialty care, you think, different from direct primary care? I mean, we're acting under the same umbrella and the same theory, but what other considerations go into a specialty practice that perhaps wouldn't go into a primary practice, or maybe they're none?
I think there's a lot of overlap for sure, and it probably depends on the specialty. I really probably say it's a spectrum from fee-for-service and very incidental care, radiology, pathology, probably just not enough frequency to ever justify a membership, hopefully. And then from there, you shift right towards, let's say, dermatology, which is often going to be mostly acute care. But then there's going to be some percentage, maybe 10, 20% of chronic care, chronic eczema, you know, dermatitis, psoriasis, et cetera, that really do justify the value of a membership. But then as you shift more towards the middle, I think you see a lot more overlap. Cardiology being probably a very good example where you might have young children or older adults who have chronic heart conditions and are going to want access on a regular basis, but then still open up the opportunity for fee-for-service, palpitations, 40-year-old workout, you know, release and make sure there's, you know, no cardiac issues, or kind of hub and spoke testing for stress treadmill. You know, you could have several throughout the city, or consulting doctor to doctor on reading EKGs from a larger catch area. So a lot of different ways to monetize the specialty. And then the farther right to the other half of the spectrum is more your chronic care specialties. Your endocrinology, psychology, internal medicine, all those things where, yeah, you probably have a diagnosis now that is going to require ongoing care. And there'll still be a portion of patients that just need incidental care, but the bulk would fit well into a membership model. So in a lot of ways, very similar to primary care, just with those adjustments.
That makes sense. And I think, you know, my wife's a rheumatologist, and I think she'd probably fall towards the right. You'd have a lot of chronic care, but certainly a fair amount of patients that are coming in for new diagnoses. And I think on the one side of things too, this is, we live in a city, and I think a lot of cities in the country, where you got a 6 to 8 month waiting list to get in to see some of these specialists. And so even just making the diagnosis is a big deal for people.
It really is. And that is the kind of perfect scenario where a great specialty where people are going to want to come back once they have an initial diagnosis, adjusting meds with a direct primary care or without, just depending what else they need, but routine labs, routine visits, routine procedures, routine meds. And, you know, rheumatology, there's definitely going to be some things that aren't wholesale. But this is, you know, several years back, there was a news source doing an article on a hospital in Maine that charged $28,000 for a Remicade injection. And they were trying to push the consumer-driven healthcare angle and were able to find a hospital nearby that would do it for $14,000. But in the direct care, direct specialty care model, the wholesale cost would be about, I think, $1,167 for the Remicade. Throw in another 10 or 20 bucks for IV start kit, IV fluids, things like that. And you could have a $300 pump that you would essentially have as just a base cost and do an infusion in the office. So, of course, again, not all meds, but that's definitely a huge savings. And if you spread that out or bill it through insurance, depending on the patient insurance and things, still means the specialist is getting paid fairly and efficiently for what they're doing, which frees them up actually to see possibly more patients, you know, cut into that wait list some. We're wasting so much of our doctor's time on busy work and scheduling and charting that's not adding value to the consumer.
Yeah, and I think it's important to talk about how, you know, we're not saying that patients shouldn't have insurance necessarily. And certainly there are things that insurance can be useful, especially these high deductible plans with HSAs. So certainly for some of these more expensive medications, they could use their insurance, right?
That would be, the wraparound is, I do think sometimes direct care gets typecast as anti-insurance, but really we're about pro-efficiency, and you remove all the things that you can make affordable, methotrexate, pennies a pill, you know, Imuran, a couple of dollars a month. So, you know, hydroxyzine or HCQ before COVID was pennies a pill. So you could do triple therapy for a patient with the kind of supporting diagnosis from a rheumatologist for less than $10 a month. Leflunomide was also incredibly cheap for a long time. So there's definitely an aspect there where the direct specialty care can work with the direct primary care or the wholesale meds and the wholesale labs. A SED rate for us is $3. A CRP is $3. A rheumatoid panel, an ANA panel is like $8. You don't need insurance for that. It's not making it cheaper. If it did make it cheaper, you're paying more than you should be in premiums. So it's really about right-sizing the insurance and not to give insurance more credit than they're due, but they can't fix their side of it until doctors fix their side of it.
Yeah, those are great points. So, you know, this show is geared towards early career physicians. So say you're coming out of training or maybe you're a few years out and you think that you want to start a practice and you're looking at traditional fee-for-service practice or you're looking at perhaps a direct specialty care. What are some of the factors you want to consider when you're making that decision? And how do you, I mean, I know you're obviously biased, but how do you come to that decision as either a new grad or a recent grad?
You know, I think it is similar to choosing a specialty. You have to really be honest with yourself. What do I want to do? What is my definition of success? One of my CEO patients, you know, kind of taught me that a decade ago, and as cheesy as it is, it still fits. Do you want to be your own business owner? Do you like that side of it? Choosing the marketing and going to the Chamber of Commerce, and talking to patients and making all the decisions for when you have a holiday and when you don't and hiring and firing. If you don't love that, then yeah, maybe starting your own practice isn't the best choice compared to joining an existing direct care practice. And right now, interestingly enough, that's the big bottleneck to growth, is the clinics who have figured out the secret sauce are trying to grow and trying to find those doctors. I would probably estimate the number at somewhere between 1 in 5 and 1 in 10 doctors need to have that love of the business side. The rest will make just great employees and be very happy in that space. I think the money opportunity is very good. I would say upper third, upper quartile, but it's not going to be the top 10%, most likely. I think direct care at its core, one of the fundamental pieces is making healthcare as affordable as possible, right? Versus concierge, which is charge as much as you can kind of get away with. And yeah, I talked to a pulmonologist who had a fantastic offer to do the ICU in a, you know, urban setting. And it's going to be hard to match that when you're trying to bill the patient. So if you are more driven towards the highest income you can get, okay, go for it. But you might have to deal with more bureaucracy, less control than the standard burnout type stuff. But once you've made those decisions, I think the rest is pretty straightforward.
Fair enough. And I think, you know, when you're looking at it too, it seems as though you'd have a lot less initial startup capital needed and less overhead and certainly a lot less time to get the thing off the ground than you would in a traditional insurance-based model, is my understanding.
Hey guys, we're going to take a quick break from today's episode to talk about today's sponsor, FlipMD. FlipMD is a competitive marketplace where physicians can source and secure consulting side gigs. Jobs come from a broad range of clients across all major industries who are looking for medical experts in their field. FlipMD allows physicians to pick and choose the consulting work that fits their schedule and their interests, so you can continue to provide quality patient care while exploring new opportunities. And here's the coolest part. You get to set the parameters for your work, including an hourly rate. So join the thousands of physicians who are diversifying their income streams and expanding their careers with FlipMD. With FlipMD, you can pick up consulting work when you are available, try out a non-clinical career, or even do something completely outside the realm of patient care. FlipMD is a centralized source of well-paying side gigs that will help build your physician brand. Join now and see why physicians are joining every day. Visit flip-md.com. Again, that's flip-md.com. Now, back to our show.
I would say so. You know, it was funny when we started, when straight out of residency 2010, everyone said, well, boy, you know, that must have been scary. I said, honestly, going into an insurance practice was scary because for the 3 years of residency, watching each graduating class deal with burnout and frustration, like that was a guarantee. At least we could be sort of, you know, ignorance is bliss and go and try a new model and hope for the best. You still have to go through all the insurance headaches and Medicare hassles and getting signed up and risk not getting paid for certain things and building that practice and then getting good at that high volume and hiring, you know, multiple staff and just really running full speed versus direct care, 600 patients instead of, you know, 2,000, guaranteed payment, no insurance headache, and just start adding value for patients. You blow the socks off the first 100, they'll fill you up. And, you know, for most of our specialties, we can get started on a shoestring and a stethoscope. An EKG machine, newer used, 200 to 2,000. A vitals machine, either take it manual or buy one for 2,000. The normal supplies that it would take to run an office, scalpel, you know, a Bovee, all that kind of stuff, really pretty straightforward. When you compare it to something like, there's a stat out there, I won't name this, the franchise, but for a dog grooming franchise, they require a $750,000 down payment. Our down payment on starting a business was our med school student loans. We often sort of like, oh, I couldn't start a business. I'm so far in debt. This isn't bad. Everything we need, we have. And what we don't, you know, have in terms of tools, it's not an MRI machine. It's not an OR suite. It's not a whole complex, you know, system. It's us and our patients.
Yeah, that's, you know, that is pretty appealing for sure, I would imagine. I think it is. Do you think there's anyone who should not pursue a direct care practice? You know, is there any type of personality, or do you think do you think there's anyone who shouldn't pursue this kind of model, or do you think there's something out there for everyone in this regard?
No, I think there's people who shouldn't. This is not a get rich quick scheme. I think the longer direct care is going on right now, I would say the biggest risk to direct care is direct care. I don't know if you're familiar with I think it's Socrates who they said, you know, the world rests on the back of a turtle. Someone said, well, what's that turtle stand on? They said another turtle. So it's turtles all the way down. So I compare that to the phrase we're all familiar with, standing on the shoulders of giants. It's giants all the way down. As soon as the new crop of direct care practices ceases being giants, there's no one left for the next crop to stand on. And so I think as we, you know, and in a weird way, it's a compliment. Direct care has been around long enough and successful enough that other doctors are saying, okay, I can be a little loose around the edges. I can charge a little bit more. I can offer a little bit less. I can take fewer patients and still be successful. And in reality, that's not the case. You know, we probably talk to one or two clinics that are closing a week, which is a scary number, but it kind of speaks to how big the movement is too. But 99% of the time, they fail for predictable reasons. So the clinics that are going to come in and try to make full-time salary off 200 patients instead of 600, kind of just the simple math is you have to charge three times as much. It's not going to work out as well. So this isn't just skip insurance and maximize your revenue. It's a movement designed around making sure that the patient gets as much benefit as they can. We've complained about everyone else running the system into the ground. Now this is our chance to take the wheel. And that's a great responsibility. If you're not committed to that, then you know, something else is probably better. Or just tell your patients you're a cash practice and leave the direct care brand out of it.
Sure. And there's always concierge medicine, right?
Yeah.
and there's home care, and there's all kinds of other things you can do if you don't want to take insurance. But direct care is a certain thing, right?
You know, I mean, I've been at this so long. So I was part of the concierge movement from 2000 to about 2010. We started our practice, Atlas Concierge Family Medicine, 2-3 years before direct care was even a term. But the reason concierge medicine struggled so much through the 2000s was that doctors charged too much and offered too little. And, you know, of course, this was really before text messaging was an option, emailing maybe. None of them did wholesale meds or labs, and they sort of proudly just charged hard prices because the initial few docs, $25,000 per person per year. Yeah, but not even the 1% can afford that. Right, you're looking at the point something percent, because in most states you only need to be $300,000 or $400,000 a year to be in the top 1%. That's really not enough to spend $100,000 a year on your family's concierge doctor. So, concierge became direct care because it struggled so hard to get a footing because they didn't put the patient first. So, I would say running a concierge model is even harder than running a direct care model because you have an even smaller panel of people that are harder to reach.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's certainly not all about the dollars here. I mean, for the listeners, everyone who talks about primary care being dead and how private practice is dead and all these things, some of those warnings still need to be applied to the direct care model. It's not all gravy, right? It's a lot of work. It certainly can be worth. It's certainly worth it in the end, I think, for many. But it's not easy street.
Right. It's not a relax and coast and do nothing for top dollar. You know, if you don't want to be available to your patients 24/7, then market it and realize the clinics that say I only answer phone calls Monday through Friday 9 to 5. Don't grow very much. And that's the hardest thing, is to see the clinics that don't work out because they just close their doors, they cancel their website. You can't find them, right? It's a never event. So, and then doctors have a nasty habit of kind of trying to keep up with the Joneses or comparing. Well, some other clinic I've heard says, is charging a lot, so I should too. You can do that. You just have to accept all those consequences. But the reason we talk to one or two failing clinics a week is because often the consequence of that is a very high failure rate. When physicians are already going to come out, if you're in primary care, we knew we weren't making ortho money. We knew we weren't going to do that kind of stuff. And so have a realistic goal for your top salary. I think you can still hit it. But, of course, the hospital in the ICU can pay a lot more. Outpatient, no insurance, directly to the patient. Yeah, you still make 200, 250, 300, depending on if you're willing to see 600, 700 patients with reasonable prices and running a good business. But like I had one, psych resident, fourth year resident. So my goal was to make $1 million. It's like, well, I employ 5 doctors and I don't make $1 million. Like that's going to, it's going to be a real tough thing, It's like, well, but I've heard some people will pay a lot. It's like, and they might. But coming out of residency, you don't have that history. You're going to have to build that up. I said, is that $1 million total or is that $1 million after taxes? It's like, well, I guess $1 million after taxes. Like, okay, well, then you got to make $1.4 million. And you're going to have overhead on that, right? I guess. Like, all right, now you got to make $2 million a year, right? So now you got to find a lot of people to pay a lot of money, or you can, realize what will the market bear. Not saying anybody can't do that, but you just have to realize those opportunities are few and far between and have a high risk ratio versus if you just put the patient first. And again, that's what I think direct care is at its core, is we're here to fix the healthcare system. Insurance can't get cheaper until healthcare is cheaper. And the big box pharmacies aren't making meds any cheaper. And primary care touches a bit of everything. This puts us back in the driver's seat. Our why is affordable patient care. And if we can make good, healthy salaries while maximizing the benefit to the patient, then that's a win-win. And patients win, doctors win, the whole movement grows. If we lose sight of that, then we'll lose that coveted grassroots movement, patient first brand, and we'll have to start all over.
Yeah, no, those are really good points. I really, really like how you said that. So I'm going to just transition the show a little bit as we run out of time here to talk about you a little bit more and get into your business a little bit more. So what do you like to do for fun?
Play video games and read. That might be both immature and overly mature. But if I've done anything, the secret to success is an Audible account. A good book at 2 or 3.5 speed and a little Fortnite, and I'm a happy man.
There you go. 3.5 speed. You know, I listen to my books fast, but 3.5 is, I got to get, you know, I have a training program to get through then.
Well, it's taken a long time to get there, but yeah, now that I'm there, everything else, and of course, depends on the narrator and the topic, but yeah, that's my preference.
I'm usually like a 1.7 or a 2.0 in anything that lies as well, but I gotta work my way up to God level of 3.5.
Yeah, those are rookie numbers. You gotta work those up.
That's nonsense. You sent me a really nice shareable book list, so I'll make available to the readers. But what are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm reading The Choice by Mr. Goldratt, because I won't pronounce his first name well. And he's a fantastic author. He has a whole series of different business books. I believe they call it business fiction, but, you know, tells a story to teach business principles through, you know, the manufacturing plant who's struggling with inventory and supply chain issues and customers and, you know, workers. And, you know, they problem solve it to some good solution. Most of the time, very applicable to direct care. And then the best one before that was Decoding Greatness by Ron Friedman. That was very good. The Formula by Albert Barabasi, maybe? Yeah.
Cool. All right. And I will work on some of those for the listeners here. And how about before we get into Atlas a little bit more, how about one single piece of advice for the early career physician?
Read. I mean, absolutely. Just read outside of our normal scope. You know, whether that's because you want to run a business or you just want to be better, you know, as a partner in business, in medicine, in family. I think that the fault is we all read the same things, the textbook, the up to date, those. And so we feel very smart, and we are, but we're very smart at a very narrow thing. And it's amazing how many things in medicine parallel things out in the real world or in other industries that if we would have learned from their mistakes, we wouldn't have had to make our mistakes, right? Pay for performance was tested in schools long before it was tested in medicine, and didn't work for the same reasons it didn't work in medicine. And, you know, one of the books I think on that list, The Tyranny of Metrics, understanding, you know, how these things work, how business people think, and how that applies. But I think I have to credit one of my ER professors, Tendings, for getting me hooked on reading. It was a book, 9.5 Things I'd Do Different If Disney Ran My Hospital. And all on the management side, not the Mickey Mouse side, but, you know, it was common courtesy. Welcome these people into your home. Make them feel special. We struggle so much with a hierarchy in medicine. You know, this is a service industry. We're here to serve them. And that's why everyone says, I hate going to the doctor's office, because we've made it a thing that, you should hate going to. First, Starbucks got successful not for selling coffee nearly as much as for selling an experience, understanding people. You know, good psychology is good business, and we're trained in psychology, and we can't really even apply it because we don't read books like verbal judo, or you're not listening, or these things. And it's sort of interesting. And if I could tack on a second one, is learn tech. At helping docs with tech, tech illiteracy holds more doctors back than anything else I can kind of objectively point to.
Great, great advice. That Disney book I should check out. That's right at my alley. So with these few minutes left, let's link tech to Atlas. And how are you helping other doctors?
Yeah, everything we offer is free to docs. Rising tides raise all ships. We want to, you know, remove all the friction and barriers for docs getting the best advice they can on how to start and run a practice. So we have a free lawyer, we have a free starter pack, we have, you know, free growth formulas and a whole team dedicated to help anybody regardless of what software they use. But also, of course, we have our own EMR for direct care practices.
That's wonderful. And where can we find more about that if people are interested?
Our website is atlas.md for the EMR. We have a YouTube channel, and then anybody can reach out to us at hello@atlas.md, or we have a great live chat. The later in the evening, the more sarcastic my brothers who are on the live chat might be, but they're good people. They try to keep it light and funny. So,
well, that's great. So thank you so much for coming on the show and giving us a great chat about direct care and direct specialty care. I really enjoyed it. And for all listeners out there, all these links will be on the show notes, including this really awesome reading shareable Excel list, which I have to go through with a highlighter later and see what else I can add once I get to 3.5 speed. But thanks, Josh, so much for coming on the show. And thanks for all you're doing for the doctors and the patients out there.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
What an awesome show with Dr. Josh Umber. I really learned so much, both about direct specialty care, but direct care in general, and we even touched on some points about concierge medicine. It really would benefit everyone to have another listen. If you enjoyed today's show, please leave me an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps get the show out there. The other thing I'd like you to do after listening is visit my website at andrewtisserdo.com, where you can find lots of free resources for the early career physician. Thank you again for listening. And remember, keep talking. All opinions expressed by the guest in this episode are solely the guest's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Andrew Tisser DO, Talk to Me Doc LLC, or any affiliates thereof. The guest's opinions are based upon information he or she considers reliable, but Andrew Tisser DO, Talk to Me Doc LLC, nor any affiliates thereof warrant its completeness or accuracy. The guest, Andrew Tisser DO, Talk to Me Doc LLC, or any affiliates thereof are not under any obligation to update or correct any information provided in this episode. The guest statements and opinions are subject to change without notice.